Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's For Scum and GA Memories with myself, Aidan Rashley, and of course, as always, Ray Lennon. And this week we're talking about the 1943 Connacht Football Final. And so to tell us more, we have Ray. Hello, Ray, how are you?
How are you, Aidan? How are you doing? Oh, very good,
Not too
thanks.
bad. That's good, that's good. Yeah, so another great Connacht Final for Scum.
Well, this was a long-awaited Connacht final, Aidan. Roscommon had waited from 1914 to win a Connacht final. Would you believe that? 29 years.
That's a serious gap, all right,
Yeah.
for Roscommon, yeah.
It was the longest ever break in Roscommon's history from winning a Connacht championship. They won one in 1905, Aidan, 1912, 1914, and then in 1943. So,
What would you say was the reason behind it? Was it just that the previous team had broken up and it just took a while to build the team up, or would it have been a change of management, or the way that there's usually a reason behind it, or I suppose it just wasn't happening for them. It was just bad luck, I suppose.
well, Aidan, I'd say it's like everything else. The first main ingredient of success is good players. And the
Yeah.
second is good support, good management, good county board. And Roscommon in the early 40s, late 30s, early 40s, came into what was known as the glorious 40s for Roscommon, when
Yeah.
Roscommon produced, Aidan, at the one time, probably some of the greatest players that ever came together in
You could nearly
Roscommon.
call it a golden decade, really, for in Roscommon football, couldn't you?
It was, and if you look at the players that's been talked about, we've mentioned them on previous programs. The players like Liam Gilmartin and Eamon Boland in midfield, one of the
Yeah.
best midfield partnerships ever, not alone for Roscommon, but by all accounts, they were two of the greatest midfielders that ever played the game. Like they were superior to Kerry in their time, superior to Cavan, and Cavan and Kerry were the two great powers at that stage. As well as Galway, of course, Roscommon were. Superior to Galway in the early 40s as well, and Mayo. So, you've a combination of Roscommon winning the All-Ireland Minor in 1939 and 1941, then as well. And those two teams produced nearly all of the 1943 team. So, you're looking at
Yeah.
players like Bill Carless, Bill Jackson, Brendan Lynch, Liam Gilmartin, Eamon Boland, Donal Keenan, some of the great players, and then of course you had Jimmy Murray and Phelan Murray as well. JP Doc O'Callaghan from Castlereagh fullback, supposedly an amazing player. Frankie Kinloch, and then of course Jack McQuillan. Roscommon had some unreal players all coming
And I
together at the one
suppose,
time.
club wise, would there have been a wide range of clubs being represented on the team, or would it be just a handful of clubs, or what way was it that way done that way?
It wasn't that well spread out, Aidan.
Yeah.
Nowadays in Roscommon, we've nearly players from all over the county. We've players from Boyle, Western Gaels, Roscommon Gaels, Clannagh, Pearses, all from the very north to the very south of Roscommon. In
Was
19
there everyone in back in those days from your own club, the Kilglass Gaels?
Well, we weren't formed. Kilglass Gaels wasn't formed until 1982. But
All right, okay.
the team was St Barry's from back in the 50s and my grandfather's time. But in 1946, John Joe Fallon, JJ Fallon, was full forward in the 46 team, and he was Rooski man. So
Right.
he was there at that time. But to answer your question, Roscommon football in the 1940s was dominated by two clubs who shared out
Yeah.
the finals between them. One was Tarman, which is now part of the Castlereagh Club. It was
Yeah.
founded by Dan O'Rourke. And the other club was St Patrick's in Knockcrockery, the club of Phelan Murray, Jimmy Murray, of course the great Liam Gilmartin, and Gerry O'Malley played for them in his early days as well. But
Yeah.
Aidan, if you look at the area of Tarman, it's a townland outside Castlereagh. They had their own team, and they produced in the 1943 Roscommon team. They produced players such as Frank Glynn, the goalkeeper,
Yeah.
Larry Cummins, JP Doc O'Callaghan, Brendan Lynch, Bill Carless, Eamon Boland. These guys, some of them were Castlereagh men but played for Tarman. But there were some of the greatest players that ever played football, Bill Jackson as well. So Tarman and Dan O'Rourke had Brian O'Rourke as well. Dan O'Rourke's son played. Tarman had produced the backbone of that Roscommon team in 43 and 44. And mind you, some of the lads were from Castlereagh that played for Tarman. So Tarman, 1944, won the Roscommon Championship, and they were captained by Bill Carless. And off that team, from the that was the Tarman team that won the Roscommon Championship in 44. These are the players that also played on the Roscommon 43 and 44 teams. Frank Lynn was the goalkeeper in 43. He was the goalie in the kind of final that we're going to talk about. J.P. Yeah. Dr. Callaghan, full-back, amazing full-back. Bill Jackson, centre-back. Bill Carless, Eamon Boland, you know, Brian O'Rourke. So, like, Tarman had some of the great players. I think I mentioned, you know, all of them players there played for Tarman. But, Eamon, we can't overlook also... the fact that Roscommon had great teams in the minor in 39 and 41, we can't overlook. And this is the man that Jimmy Murray attributed Roscommon's success to. And that was Dan O'Rourke. Now, Dan O'Rourke is a very interesting character. He came from a place called, townland called Tents. It's outside Drumcairn in County Leitrim. He was born there in 1887. He became a school teacher in Waterford. He taught, first of all, in Warren Point, County Down, after qualifying, and then in 1911 he was appointed the principal of Tarman National School, which is still there to this day. He had a very deep interest in the GA, and he was an outstanding footballer and an excellent administrator during his 57 years in his adopted county. So Dan O'Rourke, you know, that's the cup that we play for today, the O'Rourke Cup, you know, it's the Orlett League, and also O'Rourke Park, Centre in Castlereagh is named after him. So Dan O'Rourke, would you believe this, Ed, and he came to Roscommon in 1911 as a teacher. He played on the last Roscommon team to win a kind of final in 1914. Dan O'Rourke played corner forward. So he played 15 years senior football, you know, and he was also secretary to the kind of council. He started off the club of Tarman in 1926, which was second club in Castlereagh Parish, and he won the junior championship in 1929 and 33 in Roscommon. And in 1935, it created a record, which Clannagale equaled in 1984, in that it won the Roscommon Junior Football Championship and the Senior Football Championship. Imagine that, Aidan. Is that unreal? Incredible. So, he was elected chairman of the Roscommon County Board in 1936, and he held that till 1948. And in that period, Aidan, Roscommon won two minor, one junior, and two senior All-Ireland finals. And most of the credit that people would give for that success would be to Dan O'Rourke. He gave freely of his time, and he placed his home, his own personal family home, at the disposal of county panels, where there was collective training. And his ability as administrator was recognised nationally when he became president of the GA in 1946, and he served for 3 years.
So sounds like he would have been a man in the Hall of Fame in the GA, like in Croke Park.
He's a man maybe we could delve into deeper in another programme, maybe for a tribute show, like we could, because he's very interesting. So, like, Roscommon dominated football in Connacht in his era, but he recognised Aidan as the chairman that Antrim had started collective training, like doing two weeks training before matches, and he brought that into Roscommon. He built a garage beside his home in Tarman, and he, what they call, billeted the players there. The players stayed there, and they trained really, really hard under a man called Toddy Ryan, Billy Keogh. These were men that looked after them and trained them. And Toddy Ryan was the masseur. So, like, they were very, very professional. So Roscommon, he recognised that Roscommon had the talent. Now they needed the organisation and the support, and that's what he gave. So the nearest aid, I'd say, Roscommon got to having a bunch of players of immense talent coming together at the one time was probably 77 to 80. Do you know?
Yeah.
And if you look at it was 43 to 44. So hopefully, like, there's a 30-40 year gap between all those. Hopefully, the next gap of 40 years was around now, and we'll have a team. You know, who knows? You know, this team could develop into a great team, and hopefully, we've got a great manager now as well. We've got great support from the county board. So it's hopefully that we could emulate a 70s team, the 40s team in 2020 and beyond. And so, these were great footballers. Dan O'Rourke was a great administrator. J.J. Fahey was a great county secretary as well. everything the team needed.
I mean, I suppose really when you look at it too, you can have a great bunch of players, but it takes a special manager to get the best out of them.
Absolutely, and Dan O'Rourke technically was the manager of that team as well, Aidan. You know, he did all the, you know, he looked after, he appointed a trainer, he appointed physios, looked after the team, he kept them, you know, at his own home. Then they moved into Roscommon to the old infirmary, which is now, I think, the library, county library, yeah, in 1942. So Roscommon, it was a perfect combination of class players and class support behind the scenes. Yeah. And that's so what
the players had the best of what was going on at the time, like maybe that other counties didn't have.
Well, we get into the report here on the 43 Connacht final, which was played on the 18th of July 1943. The Roscommon won by 268 points. And one of the reports says that Roscommon were the fitter team. You know, that they were sharper, they were fitter, they were anticipated, that they were, you know, that they had the edge on Galway in the closing, in the second half. Galway seemed to lose their sharpness as the game went on. But Roscommon were, this is what one report said, Aidan. He says, lack of fitness was evident on the Galway team. While they have a very good team, and their first half hour, they gave a great first half hour, Galway did. But the second half was not very long in progress. When it was obvious that they were a beaten team, Roscommon were trained to the minute and were streets faster than their opponents in almost every sector on the field. They were far superior in speed, stamina and anticipation. But the Galway men were at least their equal in fielding and craft. You know, so the report said that Roscommon, this collective training had given Roscommon the edge. Because let's remember, Aidan, Galway were a great team at that stage. You know, they had won the All-Ireland in 34 and 38. They had won the Connacht Championship in 1940, 41 and 42. And they had been beaten by Dublin in the All Ireland final the year before. So these were
they also always had a you know, a record of having great minor and under 21 teams as well.
Absolutely, and the population, you know, Galway had a massive population, as it still do, you know. So like that team that Roscommon beat in 1943, Galway had lost, as I said, the All Ireland final of 1942 to Dublin. So like. Yeah. Like you were, these were a top team. You know, it's like, you know, it's like some team beating Kerry in the Munster Championship this year. Kerry were in the final last year. So Roscommon had to be at their best, their fittest, and their sharpest to beat Galway in 1943. In the Connacht Championship. And Roscommon had some of the greatest players they ever had playing with them. So the 1942 All-Ireland final, Aidan, was played on the 20th of September 42, and Galway were beaten by Dublin by 110 to 18. So 2 points, that's all there was in it in 1940, yeah, in the All-Ireland final the year before. But Dan O'Rourke, clever man, JJ Fahey, clever people, they saw that they needed fitness, they needed strength, and they needed stamina. And yeah, they went about getting that. And remember, Roscommon had lost, had won the final in 40, the Connacht minor final and the All-Ireland minor final in 39-41. They won the All-Ireland junior in 1940. So there were the young guys coming through in the minor team in 39-41 were now hidden, maturing. You know, they were getting ready for senior football. And they had pushed Galway to a point in the previous two Connacht finals. And now in 43, they were ready to take it wasn't the Nestor Cup at that stage, but they were ready to take the Connacht Championship. I'll just give you a brief summary of the 41 and 42 Connacht campaigns, Aidan. You know, because in 41, Roscommon had just after coming, after winning the junior. So in 41, the first round of the championship, they beat Sligo by 1-9 to 5 points. And it meant that Roscommon were in the Connacht final for the first time since 1931. So it was a 10-year period. They were just in the Connacht final. So intensive training, collective training happened in Tarman at Dan O'Rourke's house. And on the 20th of July 1941, Roscommon played Galway at Comans Park before 15,000 people. And unfortunately, Roscommon lost by a point to Galway. Doc Callaghan, unfortunately, was injured. Phelan Murray came in and played that day. So Roscommon lost Aidan by 8 points to 1-4.
Yeah.
And a feature of that game was Jimmy Murray scored a goal for Roscommon. But the goalkeeper for Galway was a guy called Jimmy McGowran. And he was a Roscommon man. And he played goals for Galway. So that was in 1941. And it was a very, very disappointing result for Roscommon. They had come from junior and unfortunately they just fell that little bit short. Now there's a guy playing for Galway called Bobby Beggs. He played in 41 and 42 for Galway. And he played in 41 for Galway. And in the 30s he played for Galway. And would you believe he won an All-Ireland medal with Dublin the following year, 1942. He was a fisherman from Hoth, I think. And he played for Galway in 1941 that beat Roscommon. And then in 1942 he went back and played for Dublin. And he won the All-Ireland against his old team Galway. So then in 1942, Aidan, Roscommon beat Mayo in the first round. And then in 1942, Aidan, Roscommon won the Connacht League. That was their first success. So they beat Galway in the Connacht League at that stage. Yeah. And Harry Connor, who was part of the Roscommon squad, said after the game, "We have won something at last at senior." So they won the Connacht League. We forgot about that. So this victory in the Connacht League in 42, it gave Roscommon encouragement. But Galway were the obstacle again at senior level. So in 42 in the Connacht Championship, Roscommon beat Mayo at Tuam on the 14th of June. And then they got to the Connacht semi-final and they beat Sligo. And they beat them by 14 points to 6. So in the final again, Aidan, was in Ballinasloe on the 19th of June, July 1942. And Roscommon unfortunately fell short by a point. And Donald Keenan had a chance to level it at the end, but his free just fell short. So Roscommon would have to wait another year. So it was a great, there's two kind of finals. Roscommon gained more and more experience. So the two All-Irelands, the junior and two kind of finals where they lost by a point. So then we come to 1943, and Roscommon had laid the firm foundations with the minors, as I said, and the juniors, and it sort of had served as its apprenticeship. You know, it's very rarely you see a team coming on the scene and winning straight away. You see a lot of teams having to lose one or two before they win one, you know, even at club level, but that's experience is gained. So Roscommon faced Leitrim in the first round.
Of course, when those players have experienced players around them as well to bring them on as well, it helps.
Absolutely. And Jimmy Murray was a great experienced player at that stage. Because remember, Jimmy had started playing for Roscommon in the 30s, in the late 30s, when they were being beaten by Sligo every year and going back to down to junior. So Jimmy had been there in the bad days, you know, and as I had a few other players. But in 1943, Roscommon beat Leitrim in the first round. And they qualified for the Connacht final against Galway in St. Comyn's Park. And that was on the 18th of July, 1943. I'm just looking at the papers and the backdrop to this final. It was the middle of World War II. British Army had invaded Sicily. Mussolini was still in charge of Italy. The Germans, you know, were fighting in Russia. There was serious fighting going on around Leningrad. The Russians were trying to take back Leningrad. And around this time, July 1943, in the middle of Russia, a place called Kursk, one of the biggest tank battles in history, was fought out between the Russians and the Germans and the Soviet Union. So all of this was going raging in Europe when this kind of final took place. So it was difficult for transportation and, you know, and shortages around that time. So, but in 1943, of course, Ireland were neutral in the war and Roscommon were coming to fruition as a great team. And the Connacht final in 43, as I said, was a game where Roscommon made the breakthrough in and they won their first Connacht final since 1914. So I might just read the report, Aidan, if you'd like to hear a report. One little feature, again, not to be too hard on Galway people or like that, but the Galway paper was saying about the game, Aidan, that it was a kind of final that Roscommon deserved to win, but the writer said that the football reached a standard as high as any of the past finals, but there was a complete absence of the glamour and rivalry of the Galway Mayo clashes. on the whole, it was a scrappy game with little two and twos over. That's what he said. But see there, he's pointed that they prefer a Galway Mayo kind of finals. That's, you know, like that's what Roscommon.
That's harsh on Roscommon, really, because I mean, this was an emerging Roscommon team that were, you know, that were there, that were in the kind of final of merit.
Absolutely, but it's just one person's perception. As but it's sort of like saying, "Oh, Galway Mayo should be the proper kind of final." But anyway, that's a little observation, not to be too hard on the man. But I suppose it had been Galway Mayo kind of finals all along, it when Roscommon weren't there really, apart from Leitrim and Sligo getting into a couple of kind of finals. But Roscommon Aidan still were wearing the old Tipperary style jerseys in this kind of final. They didn't start wearing the blue or the yellow jersey until the final, the All Ireland final against Mayo later on that year. And I'll come back into a little piece about the Roscommon jersey colour in a minute. But this is a report, just briefly. Roscommon won by 268 points in 1943 in the Connacht final, and they led at half time by 1-3-4 points. So one of the reports says it was a provincial final that Roscommon had a well-deserved victory over Galway, the holders for 3 years in a row. The game produced many patches of good football, and with the issue of the balance for 3/4 of the hour, there was much of the old-time Connacht final atmosphere, a big crowd enjoying the game with plenty of firing. So there's a different take on the atmosphere to the Galway report. But Roscommon set an early pace, but when Galway settled down, they fielded beautifully and kicked with great length. Their centre field in particular playing so well that it looked as if they were going to hold the title for another year and make it 4 in a row. Their forwards were not too hot, but with Charlie Connolly, he was the Galway free taker, he was supposed to be outstanding that day. He scored 7 out of the Galway 8 points. Charlie Connolly caught Charlie Connolly in one of his greatest moods, and the Roscommon backs were under heavy pressure. And it was only for the doggedness of Larry Pop Cummins, Castlereagh man, and JP Doc Callaghan, fullback, again Castlereagh, Tarna man, Aidan, that kept the Galway scores from mounting. The Roscommon men seemed at sixes and sevens for a while in the first half, while Galway caught, kicked and passed like winners. The Galway backs clamped down good and hard on any attempt at by the Roscommon men to hand pass. And even against the strong breeze, it was the holders' game for the first half, at the end of which Roscommon had a 2-point lead as a result of a great goal by Frankie Kinlock and 2 lovely points by Donald Keenan. So they're reporting that Galway had the better of the play, but within 2 points behind, which seems a bit contradictory, but that's what this report says. So Roscommon reshuffled their side, and a big part of the reshuffle, Aidan, and the difference Roscommon had in the second half with the breeze was that they brought on Liam Gilmartin. He came on for Frank Kinlock. Liam Gilmartin had been on the minor team in 1939. He was one of the great players from Roscommon. He was from St. Patrick's Club in Knockcrockery. And he and Emma Boland formed a great midfield partnership. So Liam Gilmartin played in 43 and 44. But unfortunately, he picked up TB in 45. And he couldn't play in 46 against Kerry, which Roscommon lost.
Sad, wasn't it?
Very sad. Like, and the man, Liam Gilmartin, lived till 98 years of age. And he only died last March, 12 months. He died in March of 2019. So he was a great man, Liam Gilmartin. He was a member of the Garda Síochána in Dublin all of his life. And he lived in Raheny. And so we look at Liam maybe hopefully another programme as well. But he came on and he made a big difference to Roscommon's play and helped Roscommon on their way to victory after a 29-year absence. So Gilmartin, as I said, replaced Kinlock, who was injured, the goal scorer. Fela Murray left midfield and went to the attack, and with the wind, Roscommon took supremacy. So Gilmartin, a raking footballer, reached every bit as high a standard as Connolly for Galway, while Keenan got plenty of play out on the wing, and he hit some great scores as well. Larry Cummins and Doc Callaghan in the defence claimed the honours as the best players, whereas Bill Carless and Bill Jackson also were prominent. Kinlock, until he was injured, was the best forward Roscommon had, while Kenny, Jimmy Murray, McQuillan and Derry McDermott all claimed their share of the laurels on the day. Among the first to congratulate Roscommon Aidan was Jerry Boland, who was the Minister for Justice, and he and his three sons travelled specially to be present at the final. So Jerry Boland was Minister of Justice. He was the brother of Harry Boland, the famous man, you know, with Michael Collins.
Oh, wow, that's an interesting connection.
Yeah, and Jerry Boland's parents, Aidan, left Roscommon during the famine. Yeah. And they went to Manchester, and they stayed in Manchester, and then I think later on, or his grandparents, later on anyway, some of the Bolans came back to Dublin, and one of the children of the grandparents, maybe Jerry Boland's father, Kevin Boland's father, came back to Dublin and worked there at the end of the 19th century. So Jerry and Harry then were born, and they then became very famous figures in Irish history. But Jerry Boland was a minister for justice in the 40s, and he was also a TD for Roscommon. So that's a little side point. But Kinloch, as I said, got the goal for Roscommon early on, and then Galway then came into it. Connolly scored points, and then Phelan Murray scored a point for Roscommon with a free. Then Connolly picked off a close-up free, and then Roscommon lost Kinloch, who was replaced by, as I said, Liam Gilmartin. Connolly pointed another free, and then Donald Keenan got a point. So Charlie Connolly's 4 point made it 1-3 to 4 points to Roscommon at the break. So Roscommon were in a good position, having played against the Breeze. And then Phelan Murray pointed on the resumption from a free, from a difficult angle. Connolly scored again, and then Jimmy Murray scored a point, and Brendan Lynch scored another point to make it two to keep the points, Roscommon 2 points ahead towards the end. Roscommon very much now on top in the last 10 minutes. And then Keenan's goal, Donald Keenan, got a great goal for Roscommon. And that put Roscommon well in the ascendancy. Galway did come back with a couple of points from Connolly and a guy called Burke. But Jack McQuillan got the final insurance point for Roscommon, meaning, Aidan, that Roscommon had won the game by 2-6 to 8 points and had bridged a 29-year gap in winning the Connacht Championship.
That was a great achievement by a great team, and a team that in later years, a couple of years later, went on to win the double All-Irelands, which is a great feat any time, but, you know, especially by today's standards. But I suppose really also back then, the difference between the ball as well back then and now is different as well, isn't it? I think it was a heavier and harder ball back then, wasn't it?
That's right, Aidan. A very, very, the brown heavy ball. You know, I still, when I was young, you know, they always used to sell the sort of old brown ball, which was great on a dry day, but then when it gets wet, it gets very, very heavy. But
I often heard people saying that, all right.
There was one other point, Aidan, that I should have mentioned there was the goalkeeper, Aidan, for Scotland in the 43 Connacht final, Franklin Castle-Reeman, Tarman.
Yeah.
He made an outstanding save, Aidan, in the second half. And, of course, you and I are part of the goalkeeper's club and union. So there was a great save by Franklin towards the end of the game where Galway were fighting back. There were a few points down. They were fighting back gamely. They reduced the deficit to a point. And then in the last minute, a high ball came in, and it was fielded on the edge of the square by a guy called Mick Fallon for Galway. And he fielded, he turned and he shot. And he shot for goal, but he rebounded off Franklin's knees. Franklin saved it. Now, I don't know why he didn't go for a point, but maybe, see, Galway were confident that three in a row, they were going for the win. You know, he was going for the win, and you couldn't blame him. If he caught a ball at the edge of the square and there's a point in it, you know, he could have tried for a point to level it, but he was going for the win. And Franklin made a brilliant save in. Then it rebounded out to another Galway forward called Sean Thornton. But his kick was blocked down by the Roscommon defence. And they said, the report said it was a narrow shave for Roscommon, as the score at that stage would have been the difference between victory and defeat. So Roscommon held on for victory. But the Roscommon defence, you know, we said Larry Pop Cummins, Bill Carless, Bill Jackson, and this guy J.P. Doc O'Callaghan hitting. Like, that was wonderful defending. But it just goes to show you that to win finals, they're not handed on a plate. You know, that you have to be courageous. These guys they put their bodies on the line to stop that Galway goal at the very last minute, you know. And
of course, the preparations, like you indicated earlier on, even preparation, even coming down to the preparation and the type of training you do leading up to the game, that plays a huge part in winning as well, like, because that could be the difference between winning and losing a big match like Connacht final.
Yeah. It's like Roy Keane always had used the phrase, you know, failed to prepare, you know, and
prepare to fail. Yeah.
Prepare to fail. You know, that's the way. So like it's like everything else. You hear so many great players talk about getting out of football, what they put into it. And I know it's easy for us to talk here on, you know, on this show and all that. But like it is an old saying that you get out of what you put in. And Roscommon put in an awful lot, and they were doing collective training, which Galway may not have been doing. But the fitness that Roscommon had built up under Bill Keogh, Dan O'Rourke, Tally Ryan, there was, I think, Malloy man as well, Pat Malloy.
Yeah.
What they had done had meant that in the last 10 minutes, Roscommon were strong, you know. And it shows, like, you know, even nowadays in football, modern football, the last 10 minutes of the game, that's where it can be won and lost. And
Because, I mean, like, they also, like, you see some teams and some managers and players saying, oh, well, we worry about our own game. But at the same time, you do have to analyse the opposition and find out their strengths and weaknesses as well. Like, you know, because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all very well doing your own training and doing your own things and worrying about your own side of things. But if you don't know anything about the opposition, if you don't know their strengths and weaknesses, you can't exploit that side of the game. You know, that side of the game is essential as well.
I think it's a balance that has to be struck in between how much do you talk to your team about the opposition is a very, very, it's a very tricky, it's a very, very, it's a balance that has to be struck. You don't want to talk too much about opponents, in my opinion, because it can freak some players out and it may not freak other players out. Some players have so much ability and confidence in their ability, it doesn't matter what they're told about opponents. They'll know that themselves. But I think a manager has to strike a balance between just focusing on his own team and then doing a SWOT analysis, as I said, strengths, weaknesses, analysis on the opposition. And
that's what I mean. You have to do a certain amount
Absolutely. But like in county football now, it's such a...
Well, it's video analysis now and everything. Like, you know.
And the thing is, all these players are on TV every, you know, during the summer. It had been, like, unfortunately, this year we don't. But in Connacht, you know, we're well aware of what Mayo have, well aware of what Galway have. You see them in the league, you see them in the FBD league, especially in the league. And nowadays in the championship, because the league has been played from February to April, players, county teams are generally playing what a team that they would expect to be playing close enough to the championship, because the league is such a competitive competition now. You want to stay in your division. You want to get promoted if you can. So it wasn't like back in the old days when games were played before Christmas and games after Christmas, where there's a lot of experimentation and teams maybe weren't as fit before Christmas as they would be after Christmas. So, like, for example, Galway's team in the league and Mayo's team in the league, I'm sure it'll be 10, 11 of those players who are playing the championship as well, you know. And similarly with Roscommon, you know, these teams, they don't chop and change as much. Even like last year, it was in the Hyde, Dublin were playing Roscommon, and Roscommon nearly beat them, or could have beaten them. Dublin had most of their team out. They just had maybe one or two, you know, experimental players out. The guy in the middle of the field, I think he was Cahill, if I'm not mistaken, you know, and...
Barry Cahill.
He might have been Gavin or Cahill, I can't remember, but I remember he was in the middle of the field. But Dublin had very few players that we didn't know about, it, you know. But I agree with you totally. You must do your preparation on the opposition, especially at county football, at top-level club football. You must know and have your information. And but the thing is, well, Aidan, seeing the club championships, the papers are there, they're being broadcast on the radio, some of them TV. There's so much media and coverage of football now at club and county level. You know, it's that little bit easier for county and club managers to do their homework on opponents. But as you said, a good county manager will have his spies at all these matches. You know, I remember being...
It's all about getting all your ducks in a row, really, isn't it?
I remember being at the... was it last year? Roscommon played... was it in Hyde Park, that played Dublin, and it was behind the goals, and I think there was a Cavan guy with a Cavan tracksuit behind the goals. No, he might have been there just to watch the game out of interest, but I would say he was there on a mission, you know. And look, that's the way, that's modern football, that's modern elite sport. You must have your men on the ground or women on the ground to do your own analysis, you know.
Yeah. And the scouts, you know, they send their selectors around to different games, and it's that another two in analysis.
Yeah, but I think as I said, it's a delicate balance for a coach between focusing on your own team and talking about that position. And I think different managers have different styles. Some managers would talk to the group about opposition players. Other managers may take a corner back to one side and say, this is what your man's going to do. This is what I want you to do, sort of thing. So it's a balance in each other. But definitely, Roscommon and Galway in 1943, they knew each other inside out. They had played each other in three Connacht finals at that stage. Roscommon had beaten them in the Connacht League as well in 42. So there were no strangers, as the man said. They knew each other inside out. And Roscommon got a deserved victory, and they went on then to beat Louth in the semi-final and then Cavan in the All-Ireland final. So great team. You can imagine the jubilation would have been in Roscommon at the Comans Park when they won that kind of final in 43. Imagine
they would have been special, when you consider that there aren't any games anymore being played in Comans Park. You know, to think that there's, you know, a big game like that was played in St. Coleman's Park, you know, and such great players on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, played their part in such a game, you know, and it's a shame to a certain extent because, I mean, you know, we both trained and played on as well, like, you know, for friendlies, obviously, it used to be used.
Yeah.
Now it's this the mold or whatever, but I know, like, we used to train on it in the summer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the height was always kept for the county championship, but we used to always love playing on it in the summer because it was a lovely surface and all that. And, you know, I'd say, you know, I suppose because we've never been there at a big game, I'd say there was a certain type of atmosphere in games back then as well.
I'd say so. I'd say, like, you know, I think the enthusiasm of the fans, you know, is transcends the decades, Aidan, and probably the same enthusiasm and excitement those days as we have today. I think that's constant. By virtue, we're all humans. We haven't changed much in terms of our support for sport and the excitement that it generates and the buzz and atmosphere. But I can imagine, Aidan, what would it be like in Roscommon Town having won the Connacht final for the first time in 29 years, and Roscommon being a very, very dedicated football county. It just would have been unbelievable. But
also, I suppose, really, to have a Connacht final, like, I know there's been many, even in the Hyde now, there's been many a Connacht final in the Hyde as well over the years, but even in St. Coleman's Park, but it's what it means to the town economically as well, like, you know, the amount of people that come on the day and the vibe around the town on the build up to the game and after the game and everyone meeting up and having the crack after the game, you know, that's just as exciting as the game itself, isn't it?
Absolutely.
The build up and
and go for a cup of tea or a drink, whatever people may want, and just soaking up the atmosphere and the buzz of all of the people around is just the banter and the, you know, even the people selling the hats and scarves and rosettes, like they're part of the colour of the day and the atmosphere, and it's brilliant. And we've mentioned Paddy Joe Burke a few times before. Even if we have the hot weather, you know, the real sunny, scorching hot day for a championship match and ice cream flowing, and as Paddy Joe Burke says, sunshine and, you know, tar melting, ice cream melting, flags flying.
Yeah.
And cuckoo singing, you know, it's a great saying. It just sums up championship football. But I just mentioned a few minutes ago about how Roscommon had been wearing blue jerseys with a gold hoop, you know, the Tipperary jersey. That's what Roscommon had been wearing in that kind of final that day. So you can imagine anybody listening to the game, listen to us now even, if they were at the game in Comans Park, the castle was visible. There would have been a stand terracing on the opposite side of the field from the castle. you can see sort of the vestiges of it still there, some concrete still there. But on the pitch itself, you would have seen Galway wearing their maroon jerseys, white togs, and I think they wore white socks back in the day. Roscommon were wearing blue jerseys with a gold hoop and white togs and blue socks with yellow patches, you know, the Tipperary.
Yeah.
So to all intents and purposes, it would have looked like a Galway-Tipperary match. So
yeah,
that, just in the mind's eye, if you just picture that, that's what Roscommon were wearing. And in Roscommon wore the Tipperary jerseys right up until the All-Ireland final in 43. But Cavan wore all blue. So Roscommon county team was asked on the eve of the All-Ireland final in 1943 by the Central Council to change their colours. Now, Dan O'Rourke was Roscommon's Central Council representative, and he told the Central Council that Roscommon would change their jerseys, but not the colours. So Roscommon wore yellow jerseys with blue collars and cuffs, and they wear those colours to this day. Whether they be yellow and blue, gold or primrose and blue, the GA records state Roscommon's colours are blue and gold, or blue and yellow.
That's an interesting fact about the kit, because I suppose really to appreciate what we know now, you need to appreciate what we have now. You need to know about, you know, I suppose the facts about, you know, the past as well, you know, so we know where it all came from.
Absolutely. And I think, like, the only three times I can remember us Roscommon wearing the Tipperary jersey after that was in 77 and 80, All-Ireland senior semi-finals against Armagh. And then we wore it, the minor team, Roscommon minor team wore it in 1992 in the semi-final against Armagh. And it's a lovely jersey. I personally love Roscommon to adopt the hoop back in their away kit in, you know, the hoop, the gold hoop. You know, it gives it that little bit of, what's the word? It just gives it a little bit more style. You know, I think a band in the middle of a jersey is very nice. You know, it's really traditional GAA jersey, a band. You see lots of teams wearing them. Like Mayo, in fairness, you know, they wear the red band with the green jersey. It's nice, you know, and the Tipperary is nice. Clare is nice. Kerry, you know, Leitrim, I love, it's only a personal thing, it's a fashion. Stakes.
Yeah. I'm not an expert. But that jersey he wore, like, you know, but I think on that day it was the white togs, wasn't it? I don't think it was the blue togs as normal. I think it was the white togs.
In 92. Oh, we wore the blue togs, yeah. We wore the blue togs. Yeah. In 1980, they wore the blue togs as well, and in 77, they wore white togs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but here's the thing, after the War of Independence and the Civil War in 1916, life took shape in Roscommon again, and the county board decided on official county colours, right?
Yeah.
And the official county colours that were decided upon in Roscommon were green jerseys, right? Green jerseys with black collars and cuffs. And these colours remained until 1939. Imagine black jerseys, green jerseys with black collars and cuffs. So that's what Roscommon wore until 1939.
Yeah.
And this is where there was a Castlereagh connection now. So during the 1930s, a group of young men, boys from Castlereagh, made a collection for a football. And there were the boys, Bill Hillard, Bill Jackson, Frank Carroll and John Callaghan, to name a few. They approached John Callaghan's father and he promised them a set of jerseys. So they went to buy a ball, but John Callaghan's father promised them a set of jerseys. He bought the jerseys, and they were blue and yellow, the colours of the front of his shop and bakery, which was in Main Street, Castlereagh, near the Market Square at the time. So the blue and yellow jerseys John Callan bought were the colours of his bakery. A few years later, the Castlereagh GA club adopted the blue and yellow as their club colours. And then there were two GA clubs in the parish. Tarraman had the black and white, Castlereagh blue and yellow. Then in 1937, Tarraman and Castlereagh clubs amalgamated under the name of Tarraman and wore blue, the blue and yellow of Castlereagh, right?
Right.
So the blue and yellow of Castlereagh came into being then. In 1939, in the Connacht Minor and Junior Finals, they were both played in the Domain in Castlereagh, which is a beautiful spot on the river.
It's actually a lovely spot.
Isn't it a nice place on the River Suck? It's beautiful. So much, you know, nice walkways and whatnot. So in 1939, the Connacht Minor and Junior Football Finals, playing at the Domain in Castlereagh, Mayo were the opponents in both games. But Roscommon County set-up had only one set of jerseys. So the junior team were the most important, and they wore the county colours, right? That was black or green with black. But the minor team wore the Tarman or Castlereagh colours of blue and blue with the yellow hoop, right? The Tipperary jerseys. So both won their kind of finals. The juniors went to the All-Ireland final, which they lost to Dublin. The minors went to the All-Ireland final, where they defeated Monaghan. And they wore, they continue to wear the Tarman blue and yellow jersey, or the Tipperary jersey. So after winning the minor in 1939, the following year, the county board says, right, we're going to stick with the blue and yellow. Isn't that brilliant?
That's lovely to know the history of the strip as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose really, looking back at the 1943 Connacht final there, what was the starting team and who was the captain that day as well?
Well, I was just going to say, Eden, before I come to that point, we wouldn't be wearing blue and yellow jerseys now, only for a few young fellas in Castlereagh, Bill Hillard, Bill Jackson, Frank Carroll and John Callaghan, asked John Callaghan's father to buy them a football. And not alone did he say he'd buy them a football, he says he'd buy them a set of jerseys for Castlereagh, but he bought them the colours of his bakery at Main Street Castlereagh, which at the time were blue, painted blue and yellow. So if John Callaghan's father's bakery was painted green and red or green and gold or whatever, we might be wearing something else today. But it's just unbelievable the way it worked out. But haven't we lovely jerseys now? You know, we've great jerseys.
Oh yeah, it's hard to beat the blue and gold. Well, I suppose really from my personal point of view, that the two strips I like would be Roscommon jerseys would be the 1991 jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when Derry Tug was playing, and also the jersey he had in 92.
Yeah.
The minors at the All-Ireland semi-final. Too lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, I think we had a training session after, Kevin Keegan and all that. After that, a couple of days, we had a club training session with the Gaels, and I said, shit, that is a lovely jersey.
The boys were wearing them out.
It was a lovely jersey.
It was a beautiful jersey. And that's why I say, I know where people said, I'd love to see Roscommon, just for their away strip, bring the band back into it. But then here's another thing. We always wore white togs. Roscommon always wore white togs until 1979. And then they changed to wearing blue togs.
Yeah.
Which is something. Why? I don't know. But it might be nice to go back for even a year or two, back to the white togs, you know, white shorts. With the, do you know the checker, do you know the socks, you know the bits of blue, bits of yellow, bits of blue, bits of yellow, the squares, four squares, you know, be nice, but like the old retro style, like Nicky Frey in 78 and stuff like that. But I'll give you the team, Aidan. Roscommon team in 1943 Connacht final, in goals, Frank Glynn, Castlereagh, then the full back line, all Castlereagh, Larry Pop Cummins, JP Doc O'Callaghan, Bill Jackson, and then you had Brendan Lynch, Bill Carless and W. Heavey. And then you had Eamon Boland and Fela Murray midfield. Eamon Boland was Tarn and Fela Murray in the Crockery. Then you had Frankie Kinlock, who was from down Parry Pierce's country. Frankie Kinlock went to play then in Castle Island down in Kerry. Then you had Jim, and he scored a goal in the 44 All-Ireland final. He scored a goal in the 1946 All-Ireland final. So Jimmy Murray centre forward, Donald Keenan left half forward. Donald Keenan was from Ed Finn. Then Derry McDermott was corner forward. He's a doctor. I think he was from Orton Club. Hugh Gibbons was full forward. He was a doctor. He's from Strokestown, but he played for, he went up to live in St. Ronan's or Keju. He died about 10 years ago. And then top of the left was Jack McQuillan, and he was from Ballyforden then. But I think he played for St. Patrick's as well in our Crock region. You know, at that time, there weren't clubs in every parish. So, for example, Jerry O'Malley played for St. Patrick's in our Crockery. Bill Carless was from Ballintubber, but he played for Tarn and Castlereagh. So like the subs then, Aidan, you had Liam Gilmartin who came on for Frankie Kinlock. Owensy Hoare was a sub. Now Owensy played in goals in the final. Frank Glynn got injured after that. Frank Glynn got injured in the draw in All-Ireland final, and Owensy Hoare came in and played goals in the 43 final. Or he could have played cornerback, but he played goals in 44, I think. Then you had W. Kinlock was a sub. Then Henry Connor, T. Conroy, Brian O'Rourke was a sub in 43. He was the son of Dan O'Rourke's and Jay Brennan. Now, Brian O'Rourke was a very good free taker in. He was on the 1941 minor team, so he was a great footballer as well. Brian O'Rourke, great free taker, and he then he became a teacher, and he taught for a while at Tarman, which was his father's school, and then I think he moved up to St. Ronan's area as well. So great men in. You know, the 1943 Connacht final played against, as I said, the backdrop of scarcity, World War II, the emergency. Europe was on fire, but Ireland was immune from the atrocities, if you like, and the hardships of war. And Roscommon football team had reached one step closer to the Sam Maguire Cup and the Holy Grail. And that happened on the 18th of July, 1943. Dan O'Rourke, who had come from Leitrim, come from outside Drumcairn in Leitrim, to become a teacher in Tarman School in 1911. The man whom Jimmy Murray attributes Roscommon's success to. He brought Roscommon to professional level, the level of fitness, the people he brought in to train them. Bill Keogh, John Malloy, Tom Malloy, Toddy Ryan. Collective training in his own house at Castlereagh. He built a garage and they lived there. And I was talking to a man in Castlereagh there recently, and he said that the daily regime was they trained, they had the breakfast, they trained for an hour, and then they were marched into Castlereagh for 10:30 mass, and then they marched home, and then they had their lunch, and then they trained again hard in the afternoon. So like they really put it up to it, but that's where we're at. And so that's the 1943 final, Aidan, and it was brilliant to look back on the Roscommon team of 1943, and all the great players that brought such honour to Roscommon. And as I said, the 40s was the golden era of Roscommon football, and let's hope that we'll have a golden era in the county in the not too distant future again.
We certainly have the players, and I suppose you might have seen it there on the Roscommon football legends there. The legendary Mickey Frayne had his birthday recently, and himself and or Danny Burke made a birthday cake for him all, and those great celebrations befitting a football legend. Many a time we often spoke to about Mickey Frayne on the show and in various matches. So that was a nice way to celebrate an amazing footballer's legacy, I suppose, in football, wasn't it? You know, to celebrate his birthday like that was very nice.
Lovely. And Mickey Frayne was the first All-Star in Roscommon. And in 1972, he had a great game in that Connacht final against Mayo over in Castlebar in 72, remember the 5-8-3-10 game that we covered not so long ago. Mickey scored a couple of goals in that match, and then he scored two goals in the Connacht final in 1978, and then he played in the league final in 79. So Mickey Frayne was part of the golden era of Castlereagh football. In the late 60s, early 70s, you know, that was brought together by Danny Burke. You know, Danny Burke coached all these players and brought Castlereagh to Connacht Club Championship in 1968. We forget that Castlereagh won the Connacht Club Championship in 68. They beat Dunmore McHales. But in 67, Aidan, Mickey Frayne was just coming on the scene, like he would have been 17 at that stage. He didn't actually get on the Castlereagh team that won the county championship. But in 68, he was a minor and he was centre-half forward on the Castlereagh team that was captained by Tommy Curtin. Tommy Curtin he's the father of Shane Curtin. And Tommy was on that team in 68, the county final, and he was left half back. And also on the Castlereagh team was Tom Heenan, John Curran, Paddy Degnan, Tommy Curran, Adrian O'Sullivan, John O'Callaghan, Mick Frayne, centre forward, as I said. So there was great players, and they won the Connacht Club Championship that year. And in 71, they won the county championship again. And on that team, they had the same sort of players. Harry Keegan had come on the scene in 71, cornerback. Martin Silk, Adrian O'Sullivan was still there. John Curran, Tom Heenan, Mickey Frayne, centre forward. Tommy Curtin had moved up now to full forward. So they were a great team. And in that era, they won their last county final. Would you believe they said in 72, Castlereagh had six Roscommon players on the Connacht final winning team in Castlebar and two on the bench. So Roscommon had eight players, or Castlereagh had eight Roscommon senior players in their squad on their team.
Yeah.
And Roscommon Gaels beat them in the county semi-final, or the county final, one or the other.
Yeah.
Which just goes to show you like that Roscommon Gaels had a good side. But in 73, Aidan, as I said, Castlereagh won the last of their county finals or county championships until they won again in 2003. And in 1973, again, that Harry Keegan was fullback now, and you had Paddy Degnan, you had Adrian O'Sullivan, John Curran, Tom Heenan moved up to centre forward, Mark Silk moved to full forward. So you had players like Tom Heenan was fullback 1 year, and Martin Silk was fullback another year, and then they'd moved up to full forward and centre half forward. So there were Tommy Curtin had played in the half back line, now he's up to left half forward. Paddy Degnan was in the forwards and go back to the back. So they were able to interchange their players very, very well. You know, they could play, they were a bit like Ajax, you know, you could play in every position. That's a great way in of Ajax, and I think it's maybe something, you know, that's a very good philosophy of playing youngsters in all of the positions. You know, giving them a run in all of the, you know, the areas of the field, you know, rather than just having them in playing the corner forward all their life. You know, I think.
Yeah, because I think that tends to happen in soccer, where, you know, once you play, we say, centre half in soccer, that's going to be your position for the rest of your playing career. Whereas in Gaelic, I think in Gaelic football, you know, managers do, like, you could have a guy in centre half forward and you'd be able to bring him back to the half back line or into midfield and vice versa. You know, players, I suppose more so nowadays as well, for tactics as well and things like that. It goes on a lot more now where players can, you know, anyone in most teams anyway, anyone in the starting 15 can play anywhere.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing that, you know, players have the at a young age they get an opportunity to move into different positions. You know, to give themselves a.
That's it, and even like yourself and myself, like, you know, we were first and foremost goalkeepers, but. Like, you know, myself, I played outfield then from kind of minor, where I could play either in goal or minor or outfield. And I think it was yourself, like, you were mostly goalkeeper, and then later on you were playing fullback or whatever for Kilglass Gaels. So it just goes to show you that, whereas I think in soccer it's more rigid, where once you play in one position, that's your position for the rest of for your career, which I think, you know, I think that's a good thing to do, because you kind of, if you you can be told about, oh, this is the role of a player in that position and all that. But it's to actually, you don't know what it's actually like, or you can't really learn about it until you actually play in that position.
Absolutely. And I think, like, for example, I think a half forward and a half back can interchange very easily, you know, in the sense that a half back nowadays is really an attacker, you know, as well as a
more so the wingers than the centre half back, isn't it?
Yeah. More the wing play. You know, the Sean O'Dupuyers, these guys, you know, that can go up and score. You know, the great half backs. Like, you see the Mayo team there with Lee Keegan and Colin Boyle and Paddy Drucken. You know,
even Michael Ryan was always great at that as well.
Brilliant. Coming up. Yeah. And like, it's a great fill up for a team to see your half back line coming up and score. Like, for example, in 1982 when Kerry were going for the five in a row and Offaly beat them. But in the first half, the whole Offaly half back line scored from play. Pat Fitzgerald, Sean Lowry and Liam Currans all scored points from play in the first half. That was absolutely brilliant. See your half back line coming up and scoring. You know, it's a great fill up for a team. And then when your half backs are attacking and doing damage, it means that the forwards on the other side are getting worried, and they'd start thinking, should he be marking me? Should I be marking him? You know, once you get, it can happen from time to time with the forward.
But also, I suppose, for in another sense as well, it gives the manager more options as well.
It does indeed. You know, you can have an attacking threat from the half back line, and once you have that, guys coming from deep, creating overlaps. It causes an awful lot of trouble for defences because they don't know who to pick them up, because especially if the half back forwards don't track back, if nobody tracks them back in, you have overlaps, and it's very difficult to defend against it once you're overlapping half backs and half forwards not picking them up or not tracking back.
Well, also from the point of view of, you know, if you have one brilliant player that's a great marker or whatever, or, you know, there's one guy that might be brilliant in the forwards. But I suppose the best example would have been a couple of years ago when Mayo were playing Kerry. And I think the puck wasn't as... Aidan O'Shea was put on Kieran Donaghy.
That's right, brought back full back, and worked
well.
Worked
well. So that's what I mean from the point of view of players being diverse, that they can play anywhere. And that was a masterstroke by the Mayo management that day.
It was, and they learned the hard way, Mayo did, in 1994, or 2004 and 2006, their full back line, like Donaghy and Cooper, just blitzed them in the first few minutes, especially in 2006, you know, they weren't able to handle Kieran Donaghy. But it just shows, it's horses for courses, isn't it, Aidan, like in football, and to be able to adapt. And Jack Charlton always used the phrase, can a man do a job for you in certain positions? And it's like everyone else, Aidan O'Shea can do a job at full back when he's needed. Like when Tyrone had to deal with the Twin Towers, Tommy Walsh and Donaghy in the 2008 All-Ireland final, like Donaghy and Tommy Welch were, you know, they were causing havoc in defences all season. But Mickey Hart brought back Joe McMahon and Justin McMahon, the two biggest men they had on the field, to mark the two of them, you know, and they did a job on Donaghy and Tommy Welch that day and won the game.
Yeah.
But just another example of great attacking half-backs, and one of the best goals I've seen Roscommon scoring in a long time was in the 2014 Connacht semi-final against Mayo in High Park, when Kieran Cafferty came up and from Western Gales and lent his assistance to the attack and scored that brilliant goal down towards the town end. That was a great overlapping play, but it was just a good example of a halfback coming up into the attack. Nobody picked him up. He got onto a good pass and he just rifled it. I think past it was either David Clark or Hennelly. But again, Roscommon could have won. It was a disappointing result in the end, lost by a point or two. But Andy Morden, I remember, came on and scored two or three points to get Mayo over the line. But attacking halfbacks are brilliant. Brilliant when they do their job really, really well. And their Anthony Rainbow is a great man, but they have tremendous levels of fitness, you know, and they can get up and you know, they can support the attack and double.
Yeah, you need to have a great engine to be able to do that, to play win back either side.
You look at Dublin now under Jim Gavin, like John Small, you know, Jack McCaffrey. Jack McCaffrey scored something 4 goals and 17 points. In a few years, like he scored more than most forwards have. So like it's a lot of damage was coming from the Dublin half back line. Those guys coming forward, nobody, you know, because with Dublin, everybody's an attacker really, aren't they? When they're on their game, Johnny Cooper could come up. They're all coming up. Because Simons and even Merchant last year, Owen Merchant, he came forward and scored that goal against Kerry in the replay. You know, he ran the whole length of the field, the corner back, 5'8". 5'7", small man, and just ran straight through the middle and scored the goal that technically won the All-Ireland. So it just goes to show the great teams in Gaelic football have attacking threats coming from everywhere. You know, it's not just the 6 forwards or 2 midfielders. Every point on the field is a point of attack for them. So that's where it's at. But credit for Roscommon, 1943, a brilliant victory. First win in 1915. Or 1914 rather, and brought Roscommon out of the doldrums and set them up and put them on their way to winning the Sam Maguire Cup for the first time.
That's it, and I suppose, as you just said there, they laid the foundations, that team in 43 laid the foundations for what was to come years later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's it. Well, listen, thanks very much for doing it, for another great, it was another great Roscommon GA memories, and we'll have another great one next week.
Thank you, Aidan. Bye-bye.
No problem. Thanks very much. And that was Ray Lannan, former Roscommon goalkeeper.